Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hagan. I'm working at
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
All right. Hey, happy Party Monday.
Everybody.
Is it Chuck Bonnievel, Julie Hayden?
Chuck and Julie's grassroots show, True Straight Up.
The show brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture, and Chinese Medicine. We got started a little bit late. No worries, though. Technical difficulties. But we're here now. And we're going to just jump right into it. I want to bring in our guest, Mark Poff. Everybody is familiar with him. A former of El Paso County Sheriff's Investigator. But he's also been involved with the JonBenet Ramsey case. There's been a lot of publicity about that lately. And yours truly was on a Netflix show, the Netflix documentary recently, along with Mark's partner, John St. Augustine. And so we wanted to kind of make this sort of an all things Ramsey case. We'll kind of talk about what's new, what's not new, why the publicity push, and to answer any questions. People always have a million questions whenever, you know, we talk about this. So first off, Mark, hey, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. Welcome to the show.
Hey, it's good to be here. So really the person you want to talk to, even though I love talking, is John, who went through all this stuff. I remember back when John was working at the sheriff's office and I was as a detective, and him getting retained by the Ramseys to look in this stuff. And one of the things you do notice from the Netflix special, right, is it really appears that John Ramsey is still trying to get to the bottom of this. Where one would think if he was really guilty, would he be promoting having all the DNA tested? But that's kind of just my opinion on things.
That's what a lot of, and we'll talk a little bit, you know, about what you think. And because I know you and you guys worked with Lou Smith, who was the Ramsey's investigator. So this is, I can tell you, so to sort of set the stage for folks, I was like one of the Ramsey reporters for like ever when it all first happened at what, 1996. And it's not unusual for somebody to reach out to me and say, oh, hey, I'm doing a documentary, or I'm doing this, or I'm doing that. Do you want to participate? Right. And generally, some of them I've said yes to, some of them I say no to. Let me say, none of them have I actually gotten paid for, but that's all.
Right.
That could be lack of asking. But the Netflix one, they had a pretty good reputation. And just so folks, and I know you can talk a little bit about Johnson, this was about, they rented a house, like a mansion in downtown Denver, just south of the Capitol. That's where I had to go. I think some of the bigger players got interviewed in their own home, but I had to go there. It was a full studio shoot. They had a sound guy. They had a director. They had a producer. They had people outside doing the lighting. They did not, as some have I've been on, have food provided. That was a little, that was like, where's the food? But they talked to me for probably 4 hours, and it was exhaustive. And I was stunned at the amount of detail. Like one time I said something, and I didn't realize this, but there was a woman sitting there who was like their librarian, and I had gotten like a factoid wrong. And she raised her hand. She'd go, no, I think that's not right. And she like went back through these voluminous files that they had. And she had the dates. I was surprised in the documentary to see the videotape. And I don't know, did they get that from the Ramsey lawyers? Because TV stations don't still have that anymore. That's all long gone.
A lot of the TV stations, they don't get rid of anything.
I mean, but that would have all been on a different format, nor do they hand it over to documentary, unless
right,
they pay.
Right.
It's a different day and age. But I was surprised, and then I was kind of surprised, the tone of the question, because I remember talking to you about it and saying, are they going to screw us over, reporters?
Right.
Because
right,
the tone of the questions was very much like, well, the media wanted the Ramseys to be guilty, right? At which point I said, no, frankly, if I was going to write a script, I would rather have a serial child pedophile murderer roaming the streets of Boulder. You know, that's right, a much better storyline. And the guy's like, oh, that's a good point. But it didn't do that. But what do you know from your end about how that whole documentary
Well, actually, John's the one who's going to know about that one a lot more than I, because he worked in it. Now, I did one of those same type.
He's here. Oh, I didn't realize that. Oh, John.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So John's here, but let me finish this up and then bring him on, and then I'll stop talking. Because when I did kind of the same format, there's a certain, they call it something, and I can't remember what it is, like first person or whatever, where they ask you to explain things. Hey, can you explain, about this portion? Because I did one for the DOC executive that was assassinated on his doorstep a couple miles from my house. And they go, hey, can you explain this? And then that's how they jump around. So there really is no like
No, there's
narrator.
no narrator
There
there.
was no,
It's
yes.
everybody else just talking as they jump from person to person. And then it's really probably a lot more done with the editing of it. But John can go through and explain if he went to that same mansion that you did.
Okay, hey John, so let's go ahead and Don, yeah, there you go. And Don, if you want to go ahead and bring John up too. So John, hey Phil, welcome and thank you for joining the show.
Merry
Yes,
Christmas.
did you get food or were you in the same mansion as me or did you
I was
have a
in the
makeup?
same. I was in the same mansion, but they fed me.
See, I knew it.
They would have had to feed
I
me.
knew it. I didn't even get a makeup artist. I'm like, what?
I guarantee you they didn't have a makeup artist. If you saw the Netflix special, they couldn't put enough makeup on me to make me look good. So yeah, but no, they. I think the only reason why I got to eat was because the crew was probably hungry, and I was there from like 10 to like it was probably 9 to like 1 or 2, I think. It was probably 4 or 5 hours, like you were saying.
Yeah, mine is. So talk to me about, because this is my theory always, and again, I've covered it, and we may disagree a little bit on how we look at the
Who
case.
killed who?
Yeah, who killed who? But it's been my experience that if the Ramseys are being interviewed, it is going to be a documentary or a book or a something that is at least somewhat sympathetic to the Ramseys and the intruder theory. So, what, if anything, can you tell? And I think I have a theory about what the Ram John Ramsey is trying to accomplish, but what can you tell us about the how the whole thing came together or what you know and what you think the Ramseys are after?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, Julie, I don't think the Ramseys had any play in it. Contrary to probably popular belief, I think what happened is Joe Berlinger, right, had his producers and the people that work for him go out and do some research, and then they did some preliminary work to kind of, see, okay, is this story worth even, looking into? And then as they started to gather some of the facts of the case and did their research, I think that it was at that point that they decided, okay, we're going to go ahead and run with this docuseries. But I will tell you, one of the things I was really worried about was I didn't have any idea how this was going to come out. People think that this is all rehearsed and, we get like a bunch of takes and, oh yeah, can you say that one more time? It was nothing like that, which was very nerve-wracking for me because, you have this sense of, okay, they're going to ask you a question. You have one time to answer it. Don't make a fool of yourself, and they don't tell you. They didn't give me any kind of, hey, this is the line of questions that they're gonna plan on asking you. So I didn't know if they were gonna go down the intruder theory, if they were gonna go down the Ramses did it, or whether they were gonna, really what was their Kirk
angle?
Ramsey.
Yeah, I think it was my take on it was very straightforward in terms of, I mean, I don't know why, and we'll get into this maybe a little bit later. I don't know why, I mean, the people that they went into at the end, like Michael Tracy personally, the professor, I think is a nut job and always has been. And I mean, they can prove, and they did prove conclusively, as far as I understand, that John Mark Carr couldn't have done it. So I don't know, he wasn't there. But I think where you and I probably do agree, and I want you to talk a little bit about this is, so okay, we're talking 29 years later, and I want you to talk about, you would think, and I had assumed until I started talking to you and Mark, that every piece of evidence had been tested like 20 times already, right? But there's a lot of stuff and important stuff that has not been tested. What can you tell us about that?
Well, my understanding is that there was, probably a couple thousand items that were collected during the course of the investigation. And to be honest with you, Julie and Chuck, I mean, I think if it was something that was focused on the family, then it went through some rigorous testing. I think if it was anything that pointed away from the family, it wasn't looked at in the same light. And so, what I can tell you is, I mean, I have documentation of reports of where, as if for instance, multiple items were submitted to a lab for analysis, and
one or two items were tested and the remaining items were returned back to the Boulder Police Department. And for me, that just really didn't make any sense, right? I mean, you got if you're submitting these items, right? Just so you guys understand how we look at this from a law enforcement perspective, right? The officers involved, the detectives involved in the case will sit down in a round table and they'll sit with the DNA analyst, they'll sit with, right, the prosecutor, and the idea is to identify the items that may bear the most fruit, right? What may have the best chance of maybe identifying, right, some critical piece of evidence that may identify who's responsible. So when you talk about DNA, right, you go through these items and you go, okay, how well has this item, where was it collected? How well was it preserved? And who's going to do the analysis and the interpretation of that evidence, right? So, they go through this process, but what I will tell you is that, the government has a very, specific number of items that they want to get tested because CBI has constraints on, look, don't throw the entire kitchen at us. Pick the items that have the highest chance of some kind of identification, and then we can then triage the rest of the items and start to look at those items if these particular items don't give us a result. So what was confusing to me and what still doesn't make sense to me today is why would you submit multiple items and then only a couple items get tested, right? And what they found in those couple of items in one particular document I have is that those items, the DNA did not come back to the family. Right? And the danger in this case, right, is that, we can't put all the weight into the DNA. I think you have to look at this case from its totality, right? You got to look at, the injuries to JonBenet. You have to look at the note. You have to look at all the physical evidence and then start to see what the evidence is telling us. And I think the danger in this case from the very beginning is that Boulder just doesn't have a lot of experience investigating deaths. They just
No,
don't,
no.
right? It's not, if you said Denver, if you said, Lakewood, if you said some other Denver metro area, Jefferson County, Arapahoe County, right? Aurora, then I would say, okay, those guys see death on a pretty regular basis, unfortunately for them, right? But Boulder, at the time of JonBenet, I mean, I think they had one murder the year before. That was Susanna Chase, and that was an unsolved murder at the time of this murder.
Exactly. And I understand, I mean, I had sources then, Denver police homicide sources who were like stunned. I mean, like they were like on their way to help, right? And Bola's like, go away. We don't need your help. We got this covered. Well, let me ask you. So one of the things that I think is interesting, let's talk about, because I know the Ramseys want this stuff tested. And John Ramsey's, I understand, has even said, I'll pay for it, right? And listen to the private labs. So what would be some of the key items, like, because as I understand, the garrote was never tested. And I understand we can talk about the DNA role maybe in a second, but what items do you think absolutely need to be tested for whatever that haven't been?
I think that where you have to start is what she was wearing, right? So anything attached to her body, that's where we would naturally start, right? So what was she wearing? The garrote that was attached to her, right? The paint tray, the rope, the tape, right? Those items that are immediately attached to the victim, to JonBenet, is where you want to start. Then from there, right, you've got to then branch out and say, okay, what are these other items that may be contributing to her death, right? So, as you look around, right, like were there anything, was there anything else that maybe if you're gonna, if you're gonna include the family, what was the family wearing that day, right? Were their clothes collected? If they weren't collected, were their shoes collected? Was there a bat collected, right? Was there a flashlight collected, right? All of these things that could have been a contributing factor to her death. So we know, right, that she was strangled. The strangulation was because of the garrote. We know that she was hit over her head. Well, what caused that blunt force trauma? Was it a flashlight? Was it a bat? So any of those items that are the causation of her death, right, we want to look at. And we want to look at those things first and then start to look out from there, right? What's in the immediate vicinity of where her body was found? Things like the suitcase are important because, the fibers inside of her suitcase, the DNA inside of her suitcase, matched JonBenet, but there was some other DNA that we don't know who it matches with. There was rope in her room that doesn't belong to anybody in the family, but where did that rope come from? Was that
Well,
ever?
that was if you saw the Netflix thing, they kept on showing the rope, and you kept on going, Well, what's the relevance
Yeah,
of the
I know.
rope?
I got to understand. I never heard about that either. And I mean, I covered this. So let me, because you.
Well, I mean, do you know why? I mean, were they
Sure,
trying
sure.
to indicate that this might be a big clue that it was an outside intruder? Or why were they constantly showing these pictures of this robe?
Sure. So, the significance of that is if you look to the room that's adjacent to where JonBenet's body was found, or excuse me, to JonBenet's bedroom, there was an adjacent bedroom with a bed. In that bedroom, right, that is where it was alleged that in a fit of rage, Patsy had hit her head, hit JonBenet's head on in the bathroom. Well, there was no evidence to indicate that any of that happened. But if you look real closely at the bed, especially the skirting around the bed, that portions of that bed looked like something had been tucked in around that bed. Well, on a chair, just adjacent to the bed, is where there was a backpack with rope inside of the backpack. And the significance of that rope is that it did not belong to anybody in the Ramsey family, to include, John Andrew, who was away in Michigan. It didn't belong to anybody else. So the question was, who does this rope belong to? Who does this backpack belong to? That's never been identified. And that
Does
was
the rope
something.
match the garrote?
No. It's a
Okay.
completely different type of rope. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so the rope that was used to in the garrote was kind of a paratrooper type of rope. And so that they never found any prior application of that rope anywhere in the home. What I mean by prior application, right, is when you go out and you investigate a homicide and you say, okay, this victim had rope around her neck that was used to strangle her, you normally will see some other application of that rope, right? Either you see a purchase of it in a receipt, you see it in the garage, you see it somewhere where they use that rope or similar rope to use in other areas of the home, right? To tie things together. Why that's significant is that I can tell you from experience that we can actually find out whether or not that rope comes from the same lot, right?
Right.
So was it manufactured around the same time frame, right? Because the composition of that rope is different from lot to lot. And they're able to identify from it, much like tape. We worked
Right,
a
but were
bonding
they,
tape.
did they find, did the rope come from, the garrote rope come from the Ramsey house?
It did not. That's the thing, right? That's what brings even more question, right? But then people go, well, the paintbrush did.
Right.
So how does that make sense? But the rope doesn't belong in the, so again, right, I think we're trying to make all these things fit instead of saying, what does all this evidence tell us? Right. If I'm going to strangle my
I see
little
what you're
girl,
saying.
right? If I'm going to
Right.
strangle my little girl, why do I take her to the basement? And then there's a big debate, Julie and Chuck, about whether or not, the marks on her face and on her back are stun gun marks. Well, why do we ignore people like Dr. Doberson? I mean, Julie,
Right.
Dr. Doberson has been around in Colorado for decades. The man knows forensic pathology. The man has done deaths involving stun guns, and he would tell you. Those injuries on JonBenet are stun gun marks.
Well, here's another thing too, and there's so many questions. Because I interviewed Dr. Doberson back there, and I've told the story even in the news when we went out and we bought a stun gun, and we were running around the newsroom like stunning things, and the news director finally said, "Julie, give me the stun gun," and she locked it up in her office because they were behaving like children.
Sure.
But Doberson said, and so this I think is a major error on the part of the original autopsy report. I mean, Doberson said. Apparently, when somebody's stun gun, it changes the nuclei on their cells, and he said they all look like little fish swimming in one direction. He said when you the stun gun would be conclusive, easily seen evidence, but apparently they didn't do any under the there's two marks, right? They didn't do any tissue analysis, yeah, underneath that, right?
Well, he did do an analysis. He did do a comparison. So if we did
Okay.
a 60-minute Australia segment this year, and Dr. Doberson did his very first camera interview in that particular story. And he was very adamant that those injuries are in fact from a stun gun. He worked a death of a guy by the name of Michael Boggs. He was on the in the Western Slope, and he compared those injuries to Mr. Boggs to JonBenet, and he unequivocally stated that those injuries on her back and on her face are from a stun gun, not from some, but her laying on, at
Railroad
one point
tracks.
somebody said train tracks, at one point somebody
Right.
said
Yeah.
something
Let me
else,
ask
right?
you this, though.
Well, let me
Well, wait, let me just.
preparing a garrote on a scale of 1 to 10, I mean, is that something everybody can do with no prior?
No, and Chuck, we actually, man, we had everybody from like naval people looking at the knot to, people that, boy, your Eagle Scouts, those type of people that use knots on a regular basis. And this was not a simple, I can tell you I can't do it, but I'm not probably a good gauge of somebody who's intelligent enough to put together a good knot or not. But what I will tell you is that the way that garrote was made, it's not something that is intuitive. It's not something that you can easily put together
That
and
you would just figure out.
you would just
Yeah.
figure out.
Let me go back to the stun gun.
Well, is there any evidence that Patsy Ramsey ever had the background to
I mean,
tie
they had
knots?
boats, right? Didn't they have boats in
Yeah,
Charlevoix?
but this was not, I mean, the garrote was not something like you would see in a boating type of
Okay.
knot. The garrote was made more like, my understanding is it's similar to what a military soldier would use in the field to essentially control an animal until you're ready to eat it, right? So to keep it alive, to control it. But it's also used in the sexual world
Yeah.
as a controlling mechanism of your the other party. So
Right.
to say whether it came from boating, there was no, that's why I was telling you about the naval piece. We actually reached out to a bunch of naval experts to say, is this a knot that you would typically see? And if
Right.
so, explain it. And it was not something that was customary in the naval or boating world.
Back to the stun gun, though. Again, when we were running around with the stun gun in the newsroom, stun guns are loud. And in the Netflix documentary, they made it sound like somebody could secretly, silently stun gun JonBenet. And at least, I mean, I don't, the stun guns are loud and they're startling. And you don't necessarily, at least you don't like go unconscious immediately or something like that. I mean, how would you explain that somebody's stun gunning JonBenet a couple of times at least, but nobody hears that?
So, you got to remember, right? The JonBenet's room is on that second floor. John and Patsy's was on that third floor. Burke's was on the opposite end of the room. You got to remember that the stun guns of yesterday, of the 90s, was more for pain compliance. When you say loud, if you give me a second, I think I actually have a taser close to me. I can actually demonstrate to you. It's not as, I mean, it's something that if I were to use on my main level of my home, you wouldn't be able to hear it in the basement. You wouldn't be able to hear it in an upper level. So it's not a very loud device. Yes, it is. It's kind of
Makes
alarming
noise.
when you turn it on, but to say
Right.
that, there was no way anybody else could have heard that while she was being tased, I don't necessarily agree
You're
with that.
saying it's possible. Let me
It's
ask you about
possible.
another thing, and this is, and then because there's so much to talk about. And Mark, and jump in. Anybody else jump in too if you want. And
All you other people.
this is going to be the unpleasant part. But I know I had numerous sources who it felt, and the autopsy report kind of indicated this too, that there certainly was evidence that, according to at least some of the experts who testified, the dream team experts, right, when they had that little dream team that they made up, believed that there was evidence that JonBenet, and I won't get into it graphically, but there had been sexual abuse,
Negative. That's
and.
absolutely, whoever told you that, Julie, does not know what they're talking about. Number one, the pediatrician who watched over JonBenet, who gave JonBenet physical exams, never observed any type of sexual.
But I'm going to push back on you there. But if he did and he didn't report it, he would be
Sure.
breaking the law. So
Sure.
it's not like he's going to admit it.
Sure. So
I mean,
if we want to disregard that, let's look at the actual facts of the autopsy. What we know is that there was an abrasion to the distal part of her vaginal wall, right? And they describe it as reddish hyperemia that was circumferential in shape, and that it had a certain color to it, a purplish color to the actual distal part of her vaginal wall. They described it as an abrasion. Now, what else they didn't talk about, or nobody wants to accept, is that there were wood shards in her vaginal vault.
from the
So whoever sexually assaulted her, right, sexually assaulted her with this paintbrush. And if you notice the paintbrush is actually broken into at least three pieces, right? So no, where's that other piece, right? We know where the piece is that was used to make the garrote. We know there was a piece inside of the paint tray, but there's a piece that's actually missing. So what I will tell you as far as the sexual assault is that there was no history reported, and there was nothing documented specifically in the autopsy that said that there was prior sexual abuse. They can describe that there was an abrasion to her vaginal wall, and that was consistent with the assault that happened from the wood, that which, by the way, caused her to believe left blood on her underwear, which is where they get the DNA sample from.
Now, my understanding, though, the autopsy report also talked about there were other marks that were prior to that, and I don't want to get into too much graphic detail. And maybe we just what you're saying. Let me put it this way: what you're saying, because I do know I talked to these experts, and they believe there are other signs to like defecating in bed and stuff like that. But it would come down to what you're saying, though, is sort of dueling experts in that opinion, right? The evidence was not that there was not. How do I say it? Conclusive physical. It could be argued either way, I think is, and I think you would say it could be argued more that there wasn't. Somebody else could say, but at any rate, you're saying from your point of view and the way you analyze the evidence, it is not, that's not at all conclusive that there was prior sexual abuse.
I would tell you that if whoever is making a statement about the sexual assault, that they better have some type of medical background and some type of forensic pathology. And if you're hearing that from forensic pathologists, I'm shocked, because I will tell you, I've talked to Dr. Kelly, I've talked to Dr. Doberson, I've talked to other forensic pathologists who all say there's nothing in this report that substantiates that she was sexually assaulted prior to that, there's been some prior history of sexual abuse.
Well, and let's go back to where we go from here, because I think whether we agree or disagree and how you want to look at everything, I
Sure.
think it is fair to say that the Boulder Police, and I believe to this day, the operating theory there is that it was a family member. And
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think one of the problems when you get to that, so if you're in, because I flat out had investigators tell me that sources on this say that the sex, that their belief that there was possible prior sex assault complicated the case from their point of view, because how did you explain that? And I think so that would have, I'm trying to figure out, the whole thing got complicated, perhaps because of assumptions that the Boulder police perhaps erroneously were making from the very beginning, you think?
Yeah, I mean, Julie and Chuck, I mean, here's the thing that I struggle with, and it's very difficult because everybody has an opinion on this case, but I look at this case how it all kind of unfolded, right? And if you look at how this whole thing unfolded, I mean, it would never happen. I shouldn't say never. All the stars were aligned the right way for this to go wrong on December 26th of 96. And what I mean by that is, right, law enforcement comes to the house. They come to the house, they search the house, but they don't find JonBenet. So then, right, they contact Linda Arndt. Linda Arndt comes over to the house, right? And everybody's in the home. And I will tell you right now, if there's a kidnapping in any home in America, you're not going to have family members and law enforcement sitting in the living room going, let's wait for this phone call to happen. It's just not going to happen. You're going to secure that crime scene. Now, what makes this even worse for me, as far as the logic, is that now you have law enforcement that has searched the house, and now you have the family sitting in the living room area, and now you, as a detective, tell John Ramsey, how about you go look for things out of the ordinary? That would never happen,
No.
never happen, at least in Colorado Springs, that I can speak from experience on El Paso County. We would never allow a family member to go tell us what looks out of the ordinary. Tell us, right? You remove them from the scene, you secure the scene, you get a search warrant, you search the house.
Right.
Okay. That didn't happen. They tell John Ramsey to go look for his daughter or go look for things out of the ordinary. He finds his daughter. Now, how is it that he found his daughter, but law enforcement that searched the home prior to that didn't find his daughter, right? Did he just magically bring her into this room and find her? That should never have happened. And that is why
Right.
this is a problem. But here's the thing. If you believe that John or Patsy did this and they wrote this ransom note, then who do you think you want to find JonBenet Ramsey? Because if they went through all this trouble to stage this murder, to put her in this room, you wouldn't want to be the person to pick her up and take her out of that room, because that destroys everything that you've worked on to try and stage this murder. It doesn't make sense from an investigative standpoint why somebody would go through this trouble to go in,
But
write a note.
Let me
Go
just,
ahead.
and again, because, and I, you know, and I don't know, I am open, let me just put it that way, to things.
Sure.
But let's say this is my understanding of it, because I talked to Linda Arndt too, and the police did not look in that room. The Boulder police said they searched the house, but they did. And I know Linda Arndt was stunned, I think, and I always liked Linda Arndt. I know a lot of people had problems with her, and some of the police had problems with her. But I think she assumed that her colleagues, because everybody left and they left her there, and I think she assumed that they had done a complete search, and they clearly didn't. Now, let's say, just a devil's advocate, that if you're the Ramses and you've staged this, and you're sitting there, and the stupid police haven't searched the house, you know there's no ransom note coming, you know, and so now you're like, and then Linda Arndt gives you the opening and says, okay, go search the house. I mean, at a certain point, maybe you're like, okay, somebody's got to find her, so I'll go find her. I mean, I could, to be honest, I could see that happening just as easily as, you know, I mean, because if you're John Ramsey, you're going to be like, just in, assuming if he's guilty, you're like, are we just going to sit here till next Christmas then? Because nobody's searching the house. But
I mean, you hold Linda Arndt in a much higher regard than I would ever hold her. I
well, and
mean,
I know Fleet
she's a
White is.
detective, a detective of a law enforcement agency who's making assumptions. As detectives, we make no assumptions when we're talking about a kidnapping. And the bottom line is, she's controlling that situation. And for
Yes.
her to even remotely say, "I made the assumption that they search," here's the reality of it, Julie. They did not get a search warrant at that point. So they
Right.
did not do a thorough search of that residence. So to make an assumption that there was a search is again, it just shows the malfeasance,
Right.
I'll use a bad term, the ignorance of allowing a family member to go look for something in an investigation involving the potential miss, the kidnapping of a little girl. You just
Right.
would never do that. So,
Right.
in regards to Linda Arndt and saying, okay, so now the family's saying maybe at some point, because nobody's found her and nobody's looking for her, maybe I'll go ahead and volunteer to go, look around, and then I'm going to stumble across her. I mean, the chances of that happening in any other law enforcement agency in America is next to zero. Because if you have a kidnapping, the very first thing you do is
Search the
contain
house.
the scene. No,
Oh,
contain the scene. You contain
right.
the scene after the initial patrol officers searched it. Now, if the patrol officers don't open doors, how does this fall on the burden of Mr. and Mrs. Ramsey that you didn't open a door,
Oh
right?
no,
Like,
it doesn't. No. And let me go because I want to. And I want to say, hey, we've got Sherry from Lakewood. Sherry, I think we're not going to take calls now because I have too many questions, and we can take calls later. One of the things. I think that here's where I agree with the Ramses is it's astonishing that things haven't been tested. And I personally think it should be taken away from the Boulder Police Department for a number of reasons. Because number one, I believe that most of them there just institutionally are invested in the family theory.
I
Number
agree.
two, any trial of this would expose again, and I know some of the officers aren't there anymore, but just an institutional incompetence that is mind-blowing, right? So I
Right.
think if you're the Boulder police, you've really got nothing to gain by solving this case, right? And I don't mean to disparage them too much, but I just think I don't think they're hugely motivated. I mean, to me, it seems like they should give it to somebody like you or somebody else who can say,
Not
let's
me.
just start at the, well,
Not
okay.
me. I know really the only reason why I say not me is, over the years, I've lost my objectivity in some
Okay.
ways, right? You got to have a whole new clean slate, new people that know nothing about the case, right? They don't know anything about this case, and they're going to look at it from piece to piece to piece to piece and put it together. But it has to be somebody who is not that does not an agency that does not have direct ties to Boulder. It has to
Right.
be an agency that doesn't have direct ties to any of the former prosecutors or any of the former players. It has to be a strictly neutral organization to look into this and to analyze it. Because you're right, there is no harm in going back and analyzing all of these different pieces. And you know what? If it so happens to point to the family, then I have to eat a big pile of poop. I'm wrong, and I'm willing to admit that I'm wrong. But the reality is, at least go out and do a thorough investigation. And what we can honestly say from the very beginning is that there's never been a thorough investigation.
Let me ask you one question. I've asked Mark this, and it's always been my big bugaboo in this case. When I was a younger man, I took a lot of graphology classes, study of handwriting.
Yes, sir.
The ability to hide your handwriting for 3 words, for a line of words, is incredibly hard. To do it for a page and a half, and you can switch your left hand with your right hand to your toes to whatever else you want to do. It should, and not that you can't find an expert, because there is subjectivity in handwriting. You can always find a expert who'll say, no, that's this, and you'll do that. But in reality, the chances are that whoever wrote that note was the person who killed JonBenet. And either the mother wrote that note or she didn't. And that ought to be proof positive. I mean, graphology, so you say, okay, could a mother in the middle of a murdering her own daughter and everything else write a page and a half and hide her handwriting so you don't know it's her? And the answer to that is that we've been talking about zeros. That's just about a zero. Even if she practiced writing fake ransom notes.
Right. And it was 2.5 pages long. And
Okay, 2.5 pages
yeah,
long.
but to your point, right, that the note is an extremely important piece in this. But what a lot of people don't understand is that the foremost experts in handwriting, handwriting examination, Chet Yubowski was with CBI at the time. He didn't include them as it was a possibility. Howard Ryle, Leonard Spechen, these are people that work for the Secret Service and work for the government that are the teachers of handwriting, examinations. And I will tell you that none of them ever made any inkling, any statements or any kind of reports that said that John or Patsy were the author of the note. So, like you said, if they're not the author of the note, who is the author of the note?
Who was the author of the note?
I mean, that's
Right.
got to be, the key, really the key to everything. And it's got to be they're not. I mean, it can't be there maybe, there's a chance, 2.5 pages. It's yes or no among honest, somebody from the CBI, you go, oh, great, from the CBI. Well,
No, it's good. Well,
who knows how great that guy is?
Chet looks good, but even he, I think, could only come up to it's possible,
Right.
right?
In
You
handwriting,
know.
it's either highly probable, probable, or elimination, right? And
Yeah.
it was only probable that Chet was able to come up with. Nobody came up with anything saying that it was highly probably John Ramsey or Patsy or Burke or anybody else within the
You
ring.
can also tell whether a man or a woman wrote a note. Men and women do write in different styles and different loops and different characteristics, not that all do and so forth, but
Sure.
it's not an exact science, but it's pretty exact in a lot of ways. And it's just shocking to me that it either should include them and they are one of the murders, or it should exclude them. And it sounds like, from what I've heard, it excludes them.
It does. You're absolutely right. I
Let
mean,
me ask you. Let me ask you this too, because as somebody,
let me finish. I've been waiting for this for 10 years.
Go ahead, Chuck.
Well, just you say I'm absolutely right. That's the right answer, of course. But why is it the right answer? Why is it the
Well, it went through. I mean, you got to remember, right? The family against, even their attorney at the time. So Brian Morgan and I'm trying to think of the other attorney there, Patrick Burke. They both represented John and Patsy Ramsey at the time, and against their wishes, they provided handwriting exemplars for these experts to review that and compare it to the note. And every one of these experts said, these the mom and the dad and the son are not the authors of that ransom note. But again, right, it's one of those things where it did not fit the narrative. If you
Right.
believe that the Ramses did it, it did not fit the narrative of the Ramses doing it. So it hasn't carried a whole lot of attention since
Really
that
sure.
time.
Really sure.
So that what else about that too? Because I will concede that like you said, the sources that we had then were all police sources. So I mean, I covered that story forever. I'd never heard about the backpack and the other bedroom with the rope, right? I never heard them explicitly say we never found any other rope that matched the garage. What other, and we've only got about 5 more minutes, but what other things do you know about that we've never heard about? that the police did not, that, well, that to you are things that I guess that you think people need to know that they're not aware of, or may probably, or that's not out there in the general public.
I mean, I think a lot of it has already been, to be honest with you. I mean, this case is one of those cases where they haven't been able to really control the information in it. I mean, from the very beginning, they released information about no snow, no footwear impressions in the snow. Well, there was no snow, right? I don't think anybody's really bought into the stun gun theory. They think it's something else. I don't think anybody's really talked about whether you believe she was priorly sexually abused or not. I mean, there's some debate about that as well. But overall, I mean, I think if you were to look at what isn't known, and what isn't known is that there never really was a true investigation, Julie and Chuck. I mean, they've never really taken the case and looked at other people, that were not the Ramseys. And I will tell you, and the people that were on that documentary are people that have been looked at over and over again, right? The John Mark Carrs, the Eric Oliva, right? All of these people, Gary Oliva, excuse me, these people that have been looked at before. I will tell you, there's at least a half a dozen to a dozen more people that need to be looked at that have never been vetted. Their DNA have never been compared. And to be honest with you, I think, with today's technology, with genealogy, I mean, you can look at California, the Golden State Killer, and know that DNA is an effective way to investigate a case, right? The BTK killer. That's how they were able to catch the BTK killer, right? Other than the floppy disk that he sent to a church, or that was sent to a news agency. But, what do I know? I will tell you that there's a lot of other individuals that all had a motive to do this, that have never been looked at. And I think, in order for this case to be solved, you just have to have a group of individuals that have an open mind to say, look, we're going to look at this from the very beginning
Beginning.
and test everything that we can test and investigate everything that we can
Do you think
investigate.
that'll happen? I mean, to me, that's one of the reasons I think they were pushing, and the Ramseys were supportive of the documentary, because it did raise questions, and I think it made John Ramsey appear very sympathetic. And I know my sister watched it, and she said, "I think you're wrong, Julie. The Ramseys had nothing to do with it, right?" And I think that it effectively did that. It raised questions in my mind. Do
Sure.
you think it will?
Get
Do,
salt. I
yeah.
do. I do. I mean, you have to remain hope that, there's going to be, if it's not the DNA technology, there's some forensic discipline out there that's going to help to identify who's. Now, it's going to be a challenge as to how successful the prosecution's
But yeah,
going
that's a whole different
to be.
thing,
Yeah,
right?
that's a whole different thing. But, we're running out of time, to be honest with you, because, if this guy, or gal, whoever it was, committed this crime in their 30s or 40s, they're now pushing their 60s and 70s, and the likelihood of, it getting solved as more time goes by, it's going to be harder and
Point.
harder.
All
Yeah,
right.
so.
But isn't one of the problems, he said, well, let's bring in somebody who's absolutely new and absolutely has no predisposition to it. Every investigation I've ever seen, and you guys have been through, some 10,000 more investigations, people pretty soon develop a theory. And
They
the
do.
theory pretty soon drives the person.
That's
And
true.
the parents did it, or this did it. And
Yep.
it doesn't take long before you're convinced of a theory and you become tainted in your
That's
own
the
mind.
danger. That's the danger, and that's why you don't want neophyte investigators, right? You want some experienced people that have no skin in the game, other than you asked us to look into this. Let us look into it. Let's
And
figure
they've been wrong before. They were sure that something
it out.
was
That's true.
A, and it
That's right.
turned out to be B.
Yeah. And Mark and we've been down that road before where we thought it was somebody and it was somebody else. I mean, that's just the nature of it. But you have to open your eyes to say, you
Are
know
they
what?
still in prison?
No. No,
The
not in that sense. Saying like, hey, maybe these people are responsible for it, and then come to find out, you know what? They're not the ones responsible for it.
So one of the things I would say, I consider myself somewhat of a neutral person, is what I think could quickly solve this, or quicker than a lot of things, is 23andMe. And the reason I say that is if you go test everything that seems reasonable, test it and then submit that to 23andMe, I think a relative will pop up because there's a chance the person who did this has passed away. We know of one person who might have been involved that Boulder PD said was a suicide, and it's pretty clear that it's not a suicide. So test everything that makes sense. This backpack, I have to tell you, as much as John and I mean, we go out to eat lunch almost once a week, you know, for the last 10 years working cases together and stuff. I never knew of this backpack till today. So why not freaking test the backpack for DNA? I mean, for God's sakes, if everyone's telling you this backpack and this rope had nothing to do or didn't belong in the house, any DNA you get on that backpack, I don't know,
Could
looks
be
like
a
a
clue,
suspect to me.
could
You
be,
know, there
particularly
could be hair fibers.
if it matches the garrote and the underwear DNA. It's like those are big clues.
Right.
And nobody, I mean, the two keys that you know for a fact, there's no doubt about in this whole case, is that the Boulder Police Department are liars.
Yes.
That's a fact. And the second thing you know is that they did not do an honest investigation without having confirmation bias. That is a fact because everyone came back and said, it's the family, it's the family, it's the family. Well, if you know it's the family, I don't really care if you think it's the family. Why would you not test the backpack? This thing I just learned about a half an hour ago, why wouldn't you do DNA testing on that? And duct tape. What wasn't it duct tape that was on her mouth?
There was duct tape on her mouth.
Yeah.
Duct tape holds everything. Why
Right.
in God's green earth wouldn't you DNA test the
They
duct
haven't,
tape?
they didn't t test the duct tape for DNA.
I'm sure they have. They've probably said, you know what? And here's the problem, Julie. I don't know of every item since 1996
Okay.
that's been tested. What I hope, right? What we hope is that all of these items have been tested, and they've been tested using the latest and greatest technology,
Right.
because I think
And
that's
Mark,
what's going to solve
and your
this.
point is there. Hey, listen, guys, we're going to have to go. You've been wonderful. I want to point out real quick, we're going to be taking some time off. Mark is filling in for us next Monday. And you guys can talk about this more if you want. We're going to have you back, and I'll make a list of questions, and we can make a list of things. Well, because I think it's good for people to see, right? Because,
Sure.
like, Mark, I never heard of the backpack, right?
Yeah.
And so, guys,
We may have solved
we may
the
have solved.
zombie. Thank you, Chuck.
If we could just give you a name on the next show, that would just take care of business.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, try to do that if you guys can. Hey, thank you so much. Merry
You guys.
Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry
Thank you to
Christmas.
you
Merry
all.
Christmas. Happy
All
New
right.
Year. Have
Thank you
blessed
so much.
holidays.
Take
Yep.
care. All
Thank
right.
you.
And
You
same thing
too.
to everybody on Zoom, everybody out there. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Mark will be filling in for us, and we will be back soon. It's Party Monday, I guess. Everybody have a wonderful holiday.
Take care.
Merry Christmas. Be blessed.
All right. You too. Bye-bye, everybody.